This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
ESPN 97.5, KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gao Media station.
Anybody else have anything they want to share today?
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, The Usual Suspects back for the second hour of the three-hour show as training camps begin to open, believe it or not, across the NBA. I believe NFL. Four teams I believe are already at camp. Texans getting ready to go to West Virginia to the Greenbrier to probably play some golf as well as utilize the fantastic facilities there. But we're going to have Kylie Wong, the ex-Texans linebacker, in studio at 1:30. So if you have Texans questions and maybe a camp and team preview and there's things on your mind with the red, white, and blue on Kirby, let us know because Kylie Wong will join us at 1:30 in studio. So that should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Without question.
Before we go any further with the sports.
Sure.
Sorry, I know I am the derailer of sports talk, but we were pretty sports heavy there.
We did. The first hour.
The whole hour, I would say. Except for the first segment.
I'm so proud of us. I watched the Defiant Ones.
God, man.
I've been watching like these bootleg videos of it on YouTube. I'm not going to lie.
You won't watch the whole thing?
Well, I don't have...
He doesn't have HBO.
HBO, yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's good, though, isn't it?
Dude. It's really good. I watched all 4 episodes. It's only 4, right?
Yeah, it's one series with just 4 episodes.
It was.
You watched the whole thing? I hate
it. I tell you what,
the fact that you're ahead of me now because I'm not to the I didn't get to the 4th one yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll say this, and it's certainly not saying. As a guy, I used to, like you guys know, I used to make music.
Yep.
And now that I do comedy,
Boom Boom.
And not just up in the right. Yeah, not up in the
BS. MC Boom Boom. Yeah. So I rapped for a minute, but then a lot of the production stuff, right, like making beats, like watching him work and do those things was fascinating to me because of that and getting to see the musical history and stuff. But as a creative person, I mean, now that I do stand up, you know what I mean, and I'm chasing that dream, I'm doing it, but I'm a nobody, right? And so we're all chasing that dream, and I have resigned myself to the fact that I'll never be famous. You know what I mean? I'm never going to be a big
nationwide.
Name.
I mean, you're big here.
Oh, shut up. I'll never be like a big name in stand up. I'm doing it because I love it. But when you watch that, or when I watch the Defiant Ones and I see these two creative guys and how their life arc met and how their paths crossed and the things that they did and overcame and the relationships and and I watch it and it makes me, makes me want to go do it. You know what I mean? What's the word I'm looking for? It's encouraging, right?
Motivating?
Like, yes, motivating. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's motivating to watch that, but it's also sad because I'm like, damn it, man. If I would have started this when I was 20,
yeah,
like when I wanted to do it, as opposed to 38 or 39.
I'd be bigger than Tupac.
Right? No, but it makes you think.
Don't
like,
we all feel that way a little bit when you start getting a little older? Like, God, if I could have done this or had this happen or seen this when I was 20-something and jumped on it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's always been a dream of mine to do stand-up. But I never chased it until about 4 years ago. And so, you know, and you look at it and you're like, well, I mean, there's some guys that have gone, like Rodney Dangerfield, I don't think even got started until he was in his 50s.
Really?
Yeah, but you look at those guys, I look at those guys and think, well, I'm not them. There's no way I'm that creative and I'm not that good at it. Like that guy, he's just a genius to be able to do that. So, but it's inspiring. That was the word I was looking for. Inspiring to see these stories and see that these guys, it was like the last week when we were talking, you know, at one point the Beatles were just dudes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, at one point, Dr. Dre was just a guy who was making tapes for the neighborhood. When you first watch it, that's how he got started. Like he would DJ his mom's like get-togethers. He would just sit in front of the record player and play records. And then somebody got him some turntables. He DJ'd like a school party. Kids started coming over and he would let them talk over music. That's how he got started. He was just a dude.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
So it was really cool. It's really inspirational. So if you haven't seen it and you do have HBO, you're not
and they really are
broke or cheap.
Regular. I don't want to be like, spoiler alert, but I'm pretty sure both of you have seen this part, but the whole part with Dr. Dre, the first few minutes in the studio with Eminem.
Yeah.
And the My Name.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't
that
either.
Was so intriguing to me.
I think a lot of people did, and that's why it was so mind blowing when you actually see it for the first time. It was just, and like I said, the whole DOC thing went.
I already knew that story, so that wasn't new to me.
They found his teeth in a tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I didn't know the teeth in a tree story.
So you're worried about his health. You're worried about just like, you know, bone structure in a guy's face. And then you find out, it took surgery and everything, but they completely put him back together except for the one thing. And that, oh, by the way, his voice. I was just like, man. And a lot of the behind the Dre stuff, and of course you knew some of the stuff with Eazy-E, but wow, that I just was totally entranced by that series. I do have to watch the fourth one, but it's been great.
I'm learning more about Jimmy Iovine than I am about Dr. Dre because I kind of knew all that. Yeah, I mean, I studied hip hop. You know what I mean? Like I knew about this was going on while I was growing up in the middle of my love affair with hip hop. So I'm not learning a lot about the Dre side, but. Now, Eminem, I had no idea that he was like, hey, check this beat out. And he pushes play, and after the first bar, Eminem just starts going, hi, my name is... This is fascinating to me.
What's fascinating to me is the fact that he was like, all right, I'm assuming Dr. Dre is going to throw a whole bunch of instrumentals at me. I just need to have my stuff written, my lyrics.
Ready to go,
And the fact that he was so prepared, to me, is amazing.
Well, he's also hyper-talented. I mean, his abilities... With
Eminem?
From just the verbal side of it, of being able to freestyle and do all the things he does, that's what makes him great. I mean, just to hear a beat, he could. I think, he prepared to some degree. I also think some of that he could just hear what you laid the track you laid down, and he could just go.
And there's different ways. Like, well, you know, again, I'm not comparing myself to these guys, but when we used to make music in high school, some dudes wanted to hear the beat, and some dudes. Had something written and you had to make a beat for that, you know, and then they would go through, no, this is what's in my head. This is what you do. So some guys are different. And I would imagine in the case of Eminem, he's a guy that could do both. You could play him a beat and he'll make up something or he'll have something written and you match some, you know, the beat to go with that. But that's genius at work. You know what I mean? That's how those guys, that's why those guys are who they are. It was also interesting to see Dr. Dre, just like the way he would work and the way he would talk. And I love that he was so into the music. But one thing that I walked away from it with that I wasn't aware of that I had always thought I didn't, you know, was the whole thing with Dee Barnes when he choked her out and slammed her at that party.
Right. Yep.
I knew about all that. What I had never heard him say was, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yep.
I had never heard him come out and say, I feel bad. I bleeped up. As a man, you're an idiot if you hit a woman. And I was an idiot. And I'll never, and no matter how great my career is, I'll always have that blemish.
Yep.
I'll always have that black mark. I'll always be that guy. I'm a billionaire. I'm this, I'm that. But I'm also that guy that hit a woman. And I'll never be able to escape that. And I regret it. And I'm sorry. And so to hear him say that was really good.
Yeah, the candor he used.
He was honest. And I think you felt like he was genuinely regretted it.
Well, no doubt. Because the one quote he said, anybody who does that is an a-hole or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm an a-hole.
Yeah. And I like, because a lot of times you'll get an apology from a guy, and me personally, you know, that radar goes off where you're like, God, that feels like someone wrote that, or that feels like forced or fake. Like you don't.
Especially when you're
disingenuous.
Famous,
yeah.
Because it's like, is that a press release?
This is what I'm supposed to
say. Someone wrote that quote and you approved it?
Right.
Or is that coming from you?
But the hip-hop community, honestly, I give them more credit. They're smarter than that. They know when Dr. Dre is reading off a script.
Yeah.
Or when they know when, you know, the former gangster Dr. Dre is. You know what I mean?
To me, and I might be naive, but to me, it felt genuine.
100%.
And it felt like he was genuinely remorseful and out of character. You know, I mean, alcohol will make you do some crazy things. You know, and it's because that was the thing, because I always, in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, Dre's a genius, but he hits women. But this gives you that perspective where you realize, oh, okay, he was drunk. He was angry. You know, the alcohol took
over
in some ways. Brother was just
dealing with a ton on his mind and his shoulders.
Yeah. So you kind of get a different perspective. So that was cool to see that as well. But fascinating. If you have HBO and you haven't watched it yet and you love hip hop at all or music at all, or you just like the creative process, definitely give that a look.
The Jimmy side of things is the side that I'm also very intrigued by because I knew none of it. But the fact that he was basically banging Stevie Nicks while he paired Stevie Nicks with Tom Petty for that song, and then looked like he was, you know, going to kind of fade into the sunset a little bit, and all of a sudden, thanks to his Playboy Playmate girl, introducing him to Bono and U2, who said every fiber of their body said, stay away from this dude, and he's annoying, and you can't stand him, but they're like, he's just like a leech that you can't get rid of, and all of a sudden, it starts making sense, and that whole deal came to, and you're like, good Lord.
Lamont has another one. And then, so to see them get the invite to go work with John Lennon, when you think if that doesn't happen, Jimmy Iovine probably doesn't happen, or it takes longer because that's how he learned how to do things. Mm-hmm. Lamont has a great one, though, from this series. To find out that JJ Fad's Supersonic financed the NWA's first album blew my mind.
Yep.
Basically, if not for JJ Fad, there may not have been, or it would have taken longer to get an NWA album.
And didn't he say not just one album? He said like three or four the next album.
Yes. Like, he didn't want to do it. Easy was like, no, dude, like, we got to do this commercial thing. And Dr. Dre didn't want to, but then he did it, and it blew up. And it's crazy.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you got to see it.
Got to watch it.
Fantastic series. Yep. And also, the History of Comedy was on again last night. I taped that. But
damn it, I need to catch up on that.
There was some great stuff there because of the fact that they were talking about the whole history of Saturday Night Live and Weekend Update and all the different people and how the stories progressed to where you...
Favorite Saturday Night Update. Favorite Weekend Update guy.
Crew or guy?
Guy. Person. Female, too.
Dennis Miller, I think, was always great.
Was he your guy?
I don't know. And I loved the old school Chevy Chase and Jane Curtin, because when I was little and didn't understand what the terms meant, my sisters would walk around the house going, Jane, you ignorant slut.
Yeah.
And that they made fun of those people. But
I got to go Norm MacDonald.
The dry side?
Yeah. And I'm not even a huge Norm MacDonald fan, although I appreciate what he does. Yeah. Norm was my favorite, though. But yeah, you're right. Dennis Miller was a close second. Yeah.
No question. All right, we continue to roll on. We're just into the second hour of the three-hour show, so plenty of time for you to join us if you'd like. We're going to continue to roll on. And remember, Kylie Wong, the ex-Texans linebacker, going to join us in studio at 1:30. So get your football questions on the burner ready to go as well. Usual Suspects right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, it's always good to breathe again. Barry's back, so we can all breathe easy as we all are back in studio and rolling along. If I did not appease the masses and misspoke, Kylie Wong, 2:30 today. In case I did say 1:30, as someone indicated on Twitter, I thought I had clearly stated 2:30. But regardless, I apologize. 2:30 p.m. in studio today, Kylie Wong, ex-Texans linebacker.
15 minutes.
Yes. A couple of texts. So somebody said, and I'm assuming this is to me, and I said, you should just swallow razor blades. You isn't even funny. So just
considering I'm the comedian on the show, so yeah, he's probably throwing that at me.
I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
Why would someone text in swallow razor blades? Why would anybody do that?
Because their life sucks.
I don't know. I'm not hungry though. I just ate. So
maybe later.
Maybe tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow.
Feeling
sir.
Like cutting it up later.
Yeah. Maybe I'll bring in some razor blade soup tomorrow and have some of that. But thank you for the feedback. Oh, also, yeah, probably blocking you from text from now on.
Bye-bye.
You weirdo. Where to start if you want to start in stand-up? Open mics. If you love stand-up, dude, first of all, I have to keep telling myself it's never too late, even though I don't know that deep down I believe that. I think it is too late, but whatever, I'm doing it. But yeah, if you want to start the way I started, man, is you go to open mics, and my advice, you don't have to, but my advice is go to open mics and watch. Just go for like 6 or 8 weeks, go for a month or two, and watch other comedians do open mics. Not the bad ones, watch the good ones. You'll start to figure out how they deliver their jokes, how they write jokes, then start writing your own. And once you get through about 6 or 8 weeks of watching open mics, Then just do one.
Isn't it stage presence too? Like how you handle a crowd and a heckler and...
When you're new, nothing's going to go well. Okay. Nothing's going to go right. You don't know what you're doing. You know what I mean?
It's so if you really love comedy, when you try that first open mic and it goes terribly for you, if you still love comedy, it's for you.
That's right. Honestly. You're going to eat crap. There's just no doubt, no doubt about it. You're going to go up there and do terrible, but you're supposed to. You know what I mean? You're going to be bad at it because you don't know how to do it yet. It's like the first time you ever pick up a golf club, you're not hitting a drive 300 yards. You're lucky if it goes 20 yards.
Thank God you said golf club. I thought you were going to say, like, the first time you and I went, oh, yeah.
No. Okay. But, I mean, it's like that. You have to learn how to play golf. You have to learn how to deliver a joke and write a joke and deal with the crowd. There's a lot more to it than just going up and saying funny things. You know what I mean?
I think
it's facial expressions.
The first time that you bomb miserably on a joke has got to be the worst feeling in the world
because you're not standing
there all by yourself, butt naked, literally, with everybody staring at you.
It is not fun.
Oh, man.
And you have no idea what it is that's going to make a complete room stare at you. You don't know. Even now, like it happened this week where I said something and I was expecting a laugh and the whole room just stared at me. And you have to, you learn how to deal with that. Because you know, everyone has those moments in a set or they'll have entire sets like that. They'll have weeks where just every show you do is terrible. I mean, it's going to happen to everybody. So if you think that as an open micer who's never told a joke on stage in front of strangers before, you're going to get up there and kill.
Right.
You're not. It's going to go bad. But if you really want to do it, it's like anything else. You keep going back. And the first time you get a laugh... Dude, it's like losing your virginity. It's like the best, for some of us, it was the best moment of our lives. You know what I mean? Maybe not the girl or guy that we're with, but for us, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Now it's almost like that first time you hit a really good golf shot, that's what you're chasing for a while. You're chasing that one laugh. And then when you start to get a minute's worth of laughs, and then you can get through a whole open mic and get last, dude, it's nothing like it.
It's like Salisbury says, it's all about ball striking. If you're a good ball striker, the whole world's your oyster. You just got to be a good ball striker.
Ball striking is definitely a phrase that he uses in his vocabulary quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, so somebody had this question, and we could probably roll this over to Kylie Wong at 2:30 today. have y'all seen the USA Today NFL predictions? It says the Pats are going 16-0, and the Texans failing to miss the playoffs, which I'm not sure that makes sense. Failing to make the playoffs? I'm guessing is what he meant,
because right.
Failing to miss the playoffs means they make the playoffs.
That's exactly right.
But it says the Pats go 16-0, Texans miss the playoffs. And then it says, it just says bitch please, like they don't agree with it. So your thoughts. 16-0, come on now. It's not happening.
There's two different things to evaluate here. I mean, look, from the standpoint of the Patriots going 16-0, there's always, you're going to, like you just said, even with the Astros season, it's a long grind of a season. You're going to have injuries. You're going to have things that pop up. I just don't see them. I understand everybody thinks that this is the continuation of a dynasty. I'll say that I don't think they're going to go 16-0.
But
they're going to win their division again. They're going to have a good year. From the Texans' perspective, look, there's a lot more questions than there is answers. You know, you got to have solid quarterback play regardless of who's playing quarterback. You know, you do all, of course, have to stay healthy. You got to see what J.J. Watt shows up. There's lots, you know, their secondary's older. What are they going to do when they shuffle it up and replace the guys they lost? So there's a lot to kick around here. But you, from the same standpoint as we can evaluate the Texans, those other three teams in the division have to prove to me, look, everybody last year, including yours truly, said, look, Jacksonville's going to be a much improved team. Jacksonville crapped the bed.
3-13.
So, yeah, now this year it's Tennessee. Oh, Tennessee's already on their way.
Last year it was Tennessee. Remember this? Didn't they both finish 9-7? I mean, they both had the same record. They went to the playoffs on a tiebreak, right?
Right.
And Indianapolis finished 8-8. So there was not this big separation between these three teams. So I think more than anything, that's going to be how well does Indianapolis play? How good is Tennessee? Yeah, the Texans have some questions, but I think some of the questions on whether they make the playoffs or not are going to be determined by those teams. And because I don't think the wild card is coming out of this division, but I mean, somebody's got to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So good or bad are those other two teams?
I think the rest of the AFC has enough solid teams that you're right. I think it's just going to be the division winner. I don't think you're going to see, you know, two teams out of this division. I think the Texans, from a track record perspective, says, look, if you're going to lean on one team or expect that one team's going to be the last team standing, you would bet on the Texans. But again, that quarterback is such a vital part of the equation that if it's not, you know, Deshaun's time yet, you know, is Tom Savage going to stay healthy? And if he stays healthy, is he the guy that they think he is? There's just a lot. As much as there's always been ifs at the quarterback position, I can't say that there aren't more ifs this year, simply even though you got two guys, you know so little about each guy.
Right. Yeah.
So
Lamont tweeted to me and said, good thing I'm not a dad. He was like, sorry, son, you're a failure in the world. You'll be a failure in the world and everything you do will fail. No, I'm just saying that's how it is in stand-up. I mean, I went through it. I watch it every day. Every time I do an open mic, there's always a new guy that's never done stand-up that goes up and does an open mic. I've never seen him do well, but that's, you're not supposed to.
Well, and look, and I think a lot of it is, it's like the kids that we're seeing, and I hate to even bring up his name, but you take a LeVar Ball, and the fact that these kids are fed with a silver spoon, they don't understand the humility in defeat.
Yeah.
The humility, in failure that makes you motivated to want to do more and avoid that feeling again.
You know, when I have a good set or a good weekend, I don't listen to those because I don't learn anything from them. It's the times when I have a bad set. If I go up and do 30 minutes and I don't do well, I can listen to that because that's when I learn, oh, this is where I lost them. It's because I did this or I said this or this happened. That's how you learn. And that's the same thing. So when you do open mics and you go and it goes bad, that's how you learn to be better.
See, that's awesome because that's interesting because people think, well, you just watch tape when you're in sports.
No, I listen to all my sets.
That's great insight right there in itself. And yet again, if you... The ability to be better is the ability to accept failure, but not accept it, but to learn from it and to improve on it. So that's what we got going. All right, so Kylie Wong is here in studio. He'll be joining us next. We'll talk some Texans. We'll talk some NFL, some football, and even get to that question that Barry just had on text message. So if you want to join us, please do. The HR&P listener line where you can call or you can text 713-780-ESPN or hit us on Twitter, the usual suspects, 97.5.
From Dave Tepper, Carl Dukes, Julie Takahashi, Jerome Solomon, and Fred Fowler, AJ Hoffman, and John Granato, we celebrate 10 years of sports on FM. Thank you, Houston. ESPN 97.5.
These guys are the best at it.
I see you there. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, The Usual Suspects back after the midway point of the break. So we've got half the show still to go, and we've got a special guest in the studio. So along with Nick, Barry, and Joel, we are joined, as I promoted throughout the last hour, by ex-Texans linebacker Kylie Wong. Kylie, pleasure having you in the studio.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. Thanks for this microphone, by the way.
It's a great
one. It's awesome, man.
Doing nothing but the best around here.
I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to hold it up. Just laying like on the floor. MC, yeah.
You are talking about your microphone, right?
I'm talking about the mic.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you know, if you just don't underestimate what kind of training you can get just by being in your old stomping grounds. Interesting that you mentioned you got your start right here.
That's right. Actually, this was my seat right here when 1560 first started right here, kind of in this vantage point, right, with Lance and John.
Yep.
And it was awesome. I mean, John was the godfather, still is the godfather. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of where I kind of, you know, got my training in radio.
That's awesome.
Nice.
That was a lot of fun.
So before we get started, everybody knows that, you know, you played for the Texans, mm-hmm. but everybody's got to also go on after football. Life after football seems to have taken you in a pretty good direction to what you're doing right now.
It's been an adventure, I guess, right? So after football, I kind of went into the Wall Street world, was sitting behind a desk doing all that type of stuff. But my body was breaking down. My body was actually worse after football than when it was when I played football.
Really?
And so that was what was so fascinating about that whole process. And so frustrated by it, I went out and I created something new. We opened about 6 months ago, and it's called The Athletic Room. And so all we do is we try to take care of everybody, just like pro athletes do. Because, you know, we know that if you move better, if you feel better, you're just going to live better.
Sure.
And so that's kind of the whole premise behind it.
So it's not a, it's not a gym, right? Necessarily. It's a
recovery. So it's body care.
Stretching.
Absolutely.
Rehab and recovery kind of thing?
Not even rehab. Really? Just it's prehab. It's like a lot of flexibility. It's the things you'll see the Texans use. So we'll be using cryotherapy, or we'll be using ice, or we'll be using Normatec compression therapy. We'll be, you're going to get to work with a former athletic trainer from either the Texans or the Dynamo, and they're going to take you through and they're going to stretch you out. And I mean, it's amazing when we have people come in and they get up and they're like, oh my gosh, I haven't touched my toes in like 6 years.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, dude, you know, you've been sitting behind a desk at a computer for a long time and your body starts to hurt.
I was in Oklahoma City. I had a gig last week, and the host was a trainer. He lives in LA, and he's an athletic trainer, personal trainer. And that the one thing he talked about that you just mentioned is cryotherapy. He says the best thing. One, yeah, it's like it helps with everything, but he's like, it stops aging. It feels like I'm, you know, younger. And yeah, and so how is that accessible to the average Joe? I mean, how expensive is it? Is it, because I hear cryotherapy and I think, oh, that's got to be like $1,000, right? Like, that's expensive.
Right. No, it actually, you know, that's one of the things that we really try to push. I mean, we're actually probably the cheapest out there. And the whole reason why is because I believe in it so much. I believe in it so much because it literally changed my body. It took me from a guy that had a lot of limitations to where I was struggling having to run around Memorial with 4 Advil in me, to where I can run it twice without any Advil. I mean, it's been a fascinating process. If you saw me a year ago, I was 30 pounds heavier. And it's all around this idea that it sucks to move when you hurt. And once you start feeling better, you start moving better. You just end up starting to move more in the ways you like.
Let's be honest, you can freeze your nuts off.
Oh, yeah, you can.
I've done it. And for the quick and nasty for the people listening, but essentially what it is it's like when you hear about that, you go from your neck down in like a hot water heater looking contraption.
Yep.
And in what, like a minute and a half, it gets to the point where it's like putting ice on your joints, but you're literally icing your whole body.
Without question. Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole, it's to simulate an ice tub. And that was the easiest delivery mechanism you can have, right? So it's 180 seconds. And, you know, through the cumulative aspect of it, I mean, it's game changing. It's game changing for inflammation. It's game changing for pain. And there are also other health benefits, but that's kind of what we're
really
the
first thing they
on.
Tell you, though, is change your drawers. If there's any dew on the berries before you go in, there's going to be frozen spots on the way out. You can't have any.
Really?
Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
Well, it gets cold in there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
It gets
coming
cold
out of there with 2 belly buttons.
But you come out of there with with just like this sense of endorphins and rush.
Yeah.
And you're ready. I mean, you know, athletes use this before games now. You know,
really?
Not only after. Yeah. So a lot of the basketball players, they'll use it pre and post because you do get this endorphin high of kind of the adrenaline of it. So it's cool. It's
cool. Fun.
Yeah, essentially how it was explained to me was the body, in order to protect the heart when it gets extremely cold, all the good blood rushes around the heart to protect the heart. And then when it gets back to regular temperature, the good blood is sent out all across the body. And like you said, you're completely rejuvenated and it totally takes icing to a new level. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, that's a great way of explaining it. Yep. I mean, draw the blood from your extremities to your core, get oxygen, nutrients. Once your body starts warming back up, it's going to shoot that new blood back out to those extremities and kind of clean you out a little bit. So it's good.
Speaking of new blood, you know that the organization down there on Kirby has a new quarterback.
Yep.
The questions abound about whether he will be on the field at all, and if so, how many games will he play this year? But just as they get ready to go to camp in West Virginia, initial thoughts on the Texans, and we were just talking about it before the break. Some publications are saying they won't make the playoffs. Your thought on where they are and what they're doing with not only the quarterback, but the team in general.
It actually makes me laugh every single year. I read, you know, national people have no idea about our division or the Texans. It always makes me laugh to see how they're going to be terrible this year. I think they're going to be awesome this year. I'm super pumped. I'm very bullish. Wall Street on the Texans.
Right?
I'm very bullish on the Texans. Just because, look, absolutely, Deshaun is going to be an amazing quarterback. Do I think that you're going to see him early in the season? Probably not if they can help it, right? I mean, just at the end of the day, it's great for the organization. If you don't see him, that means the Texans are rolling. If you see him, that's because there were some mishaps along the way, there was an injury, or there was a little bit of trouble. I think that's the standard operating, you know, procedure of just kind of the NFL in general.
So you've watched him. What is, in your opinion, what is Deshaun Watson's ceiling?
That guy is a winner. I mean, without question, you can tell even the veterans there now believe in this guy. They know that he's the future. They have no problem with him having the ball in his hands. I mean, that's just the type of guy that he is.
So you think giving up next year's first round pick, not having picks until late, doing all that, moving up to 12 was the right move?
I think it's a no-brainer move for the Texans. In fact, I actually thought, and I talked to Rick Smith at the right after the draft, and I just congratulated him. I was genuinely happy. I thought he did a great job. And I actually felt as though it was the first time the organization were actually kind of big boys. Like they elevated themselves. They became more of a true NFL team. You know, the Texans traditionally have always been conservative. They just sit in their slot and they take best available. And it's, you know, and it's just the same process year after year. And last, you know, the Brock Osweiler, they took a shot. It didn't work out. We get it. But it's different because in the past, I think Brock Osweiler still would have been here. Mm-hmm. And they just moved on. Mm-hmm. They cut it. They moved on and they drafted and they moved up to draft this guy. I think it was great for the organization. And I'm very, very excited to kind of see these steps that they're making.
Everybody I talked to said, to your point, look, they love the fact that he's a winner. The biggest thing for him is it's going to be the NFL adjustment. It's going to be the size of the playbook. It's going to be the hours put in. It's going to be reading the defenses that are going to change multiple times within, you know, a series, let alone a half or a game, that is going to be the biggest kind of growing pains for him.
Without question. I mean, probably one of the biggest things rookie quarterbacks deal with is every defense is going to go in there and they're going to show you something, right? And so now he's been studying to try to figure out, okay, when I see a cover four shell, Where am I going? What is the play going to look like? And then they're going to rotate late into something else, whether on a move. That's what you're going to just do across the board. Every team will do that, right? And you're always trying to do that for against quarterbacks. It's very, very difficult for rookie quarterbacks to at first learn, what do I need to do against this coverage? And then, oh, he's showing me this, but he's really trying to, there's a couple nuances that are off because he's trying to get here into this coverage. And so I think that's kind of the stuff that you just have to see, you just have to work through, and it takes time.
How good is this defense going to be after the losses that they had, but getting J.J. Watt back? The secondary, you know, losing Bouye, how good is this defense going to be?
I mean, I am not concerned. A lot of people talk about the secondary concerns. I'm not concerned about them because when I really think back to like my playing days and when I looked at a lot of these teams, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yeah, you had John Lynch, And you had Rondé Barber.
Derek Brooks, too.
Derek Brooks. It was the front seven. The front seven. Those first-round picks on the front four, they created so much pressure. The ball had to come out. So, you know, the one thing the Texans did really, really well is limiting yards after catch. They really were a good tackling secondary. So I think balls come out quick. I think they're going to be able to build on what they did last year, towards the end of last year, because they started getting incredibly creative with their pass rush and the way they had aligned and kind of the personnel they had on the field. I think you're going to be able to build off that. And I just don't see any issues in the secondary.
So to your point, you look at the front seven.
Mm-hmm.
First time ever you're going to see Clowney, now that we've seen the real Clowney, paired with J.J. Watt. Twofold question, but assuming J.J. stays healthy and he's even close to where he was, what that means to kind of translate to what you said about Tampa Bay, but then also the change from Vrabel coming in as the new D.C. and Romeo moving up, do you expect that to be another positive, or how does that whole transition work?
I do. I mean, Mike, he's a great coach. Yeah. He's a great coach, and he was a great player, and he was a very smart player. Right. And I don't know this for a fact, but it wouldn't surprise me if early in the season, a lot of the more basic vanilla stuff was Romeo's stuff. And towards the end, you started to see a shift in some inputs and some philosophies on stuff they did after he had left New England. I would not be surprised if that was kind of the change, because you saw that there was early in the season, it was pretty vanilla. They were good, but it was pretty vanilla. It was bend it but don't break. And that's how I remember Romeo Crennel. Then you started, once they got, you know, week 14, 15, 16, and then in the playoffs, you started seeing stuff like, wow. I think one of the sets, we used to call it when we play the Patriots, it was called the rabbit set, to where no one was actually putting their hand down, right? That there was just a whole bunch of guys and they were jumping around and they're trying to get to a place to where they blitz. That's kind of the stuff that I have to believe that Vrabel might have influenced. And if that's the case, then I think it's pretty exciting.
Now, as a linebacker, have you seen anything on like Zach Cunningham? Because there's a little bit of buzz about that with, you know, Brian Cushing getting a little bit older. Yep. Have you had a chance to? And what are your thoughts on him? If you have,
without question, I mean, he's gonna be playing for the Texans. You know, he's definitely has a role. I could see him as a, because he's so fast, right? And speed is what we want. We just mentioned Derek Brooks. Yep. The whole purpose of getting linebackers is you know the offenses now are, they're basically getting to a point to where they're just trying to put more wide receivers, more speed out there. And you have to match that.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if he's out there.
Great stuff, man. Kylie Wong here in studio. But more importantly, tell everybody how to get in touch with you at the Athletic Room. How can they get involved? Because if you're working with Barry Warner, you can work with anybody.
Oh, my God.
You need to tell everybody how to get to the Athletic Room.
Basically, we're in Bel Air, so it's real close off of 610. But the easiest way is just go to theathleticroom.com. Check it out there first, kind of see what we do. And, you know, it's been pretty awesome. And people who have come, they've really enjoyed it.
Great stuff. And, of course, if you hear it from an ex-NFL player that can tell you that it's made a difference in his life, imagine what it can do for you. Kylie, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, brother.
Kylie Wong's been here. He's going to move on, and we're going to continue to move on as well. We've got plenty more to get to on the show as we continue to roll on. So don't go anywhere. Join us, won't you? The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Well, that's good stuff. Kylie Wong got a lot of information, too. But pretty cool when you think about the fact that people struggle a lot just to get out of bed in the morning. And at least he's doing something about it. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, too, when we talk about athletes and what athlete, you know, how big and strong and fast and how it's become just such a change from where it used to be. Like, look at guys like LeBron's size are playing basketball. But I saw this story. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. So I'm just going to tell you the stats first. Then I'm going to tell you the backstory. But if you're a college football coach and you're looking at a kid that's 6'4", 286 pounds, and runs a 4.7 40, you'd probably be interested.
6'4", 286?
6'4", 286, yeah. Runs a 4.7 and has run the 4.7 at three different camps.
That's crazy.
Want to know how crazy it is?
Mm-hmm.
He's in eighth grade.
Yeah.
And he's already got scholarship offers from three
so
different
he's what,
schools.
12, 13, maybe 14 years old?
Wait, eighth 13? Grade. Well,
you're 13 think, in the eighth grade. I think
I started driving in the 10th grade, so that's 16. But my birthday was at the end of the year, at the end of May. So, but I think you're about 15 or 16 in the 10th grade. So 14, 15.
In the 9th grade. I think you're turning 13 in the 8th. I think you're about right.
Yeah, so you're about 13 years old.
So he's entering
you're just his becoming a teenager.
8th grade year, 6'4", 286. Name is Jahim Otis, and according to his Twitter account, he's already received scholarship offers from Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Alabama.
This dude is 6'4", 286 at 13.
Uh-huh.
So we just had Kylie Wong in here.
He's what, 6?
I don't know.
What is
it? Let me see what his stats are on like Wiki.
He dropped weight, but he's big, and you can tell he's close to what he was when
Kylie
he was playing.
Wong, that dude looks like he could go play right now.
Yep.
Physically fit. Firm handshake. Made me go when he shook my hand. Like strong man. 6'2", 250 And he's 41. Pounds. And he's 41-year-old grown-ass man. This kid is 6'4", 285, and he's... Yeah. I am... My balls just dropped last week. I'm 13. What?
Now, if you go
it's
and
not
look,
even fair.
And I tweeted this article with the videos. But if you go and look, he even shows you him running the 40 at the Ole Miss camp where he ran the 4.7 the first time. And he's also posted pictures of him coincidentally standing next to Nick Saban in person with a picture of Nick Saban behind him at Alabama. Nick Saban's not stupid. I mean, of course, he's going to go out and personally talk to this kid because he knows everybody's going to want to see him play. And the other thing that people don't realize is this is not unprecedented since LSU offered a scholarship in the eighth grade year to Dylan Moses, who's now a freshman linebacker at Alabama. So I guess they're starting him younger and getting better. But holy cow, eighth grade and you got size that you said, we just had a guy in here that played in the NFL that never got to those numbers.
He's not as big as this kid. Yeah. What I don't know, though, how I feel about colleges recruiting a 13-year-old. When I hear that, I don't know that I'm okay with, because, and I'm not suggesting this, but let's be real. We know about some of the stuff that goes on in recruiting. Mm. All the time we're hearing about these scandals, whether it be money or whether it be teams buying whores or whatever. But we're hearing about it. It's happening. You know, they're coming on campus and having sex. And this dude is 13. Now, I'm not suggesting that any of these teams that are recruiting him are doing that. But if you start to open this door, open this Pandora's box of recruiting junior high kids that are you know, big, because that's really what he is right now. He's nothing. I can't imagine that talent-wise, he's 13. He's probably just now getting coordinated and figuring out that at 6'4", 285, you know what I mean, this is how I'm supposed to move this big body that I have as a 13-year-old awkward kid, because most 13-year-olds are awkward. But if you start to open up that Pandora's box and everyone starts recruiting junior high kids, that's a scary... It wouldn't surprise me in 40 years when we're dead and our great-grandkids are doing sports talk radio. They're like, can you believe they hired a 13-year-old? They got a hooker for a 13-year-old? Be careful.
I feel like a lot of times...
There's got to be like a line, right?
Absolutely. There's got to be a line.
AAU blew all those lines out of the water in basketball.
That's not a good thing, though.
No, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's a fact.
What were you saying, Nick?
I just feel like that a lot of times it's, all right, we know that this guy may have potential. It's super early. He's 13 years old. Let's document the fact that we actually took a look at this guy, and then 3, 4, 5 years or, you know, however many seasons later, we'll circle back. It's just used as documentation for them to look, all right, this is a guy that may have some potential. And maybe it's not. I mean, maybe it's them trying to secure, just like you, I believe in a lot of cases, it's about, you know, getting that first offer out there to a guy that may be a potential star, but...
Can I tell you what the real fear in this is?
What?
What the real scary thing is? If you're Johnny on the other team that has to line up in eighth grade against this kid this year.
Here,
what? Come on, man.
You know what?
You put the pads on going out there. You probably don't have any leaves on the trees downstairs yet. You're just having to be playing football, and you line up across from this guy?
Now, the question is, where do you play him?
That's my other thing.
He's either a quarterback, and then it's like, all right, keeper. Keeper left, keeper right, or running back. Just hand the ball.
You know the commercial where Cam Newton ends up.
Find the biggest guy on the field, including the refs. Find the biggest guy on the field and give him the ball. I put him there, and then I put him at middle linebacker. That's it. You're gonna beat us. You're gonna
beat us.
Nah.
Knocks the center over.
I like middle linebacker because then he can stop the run. You know, he can move left, move right. He runs a 4.7 40. He can cover more ground if you don't clog him up in the middle.
I'm pretty sure he'll be in the backfield before the ball is in from the nose position, too.
Edge rusher?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
What edge?
But I'm thinking that you think about this and go, is he playing varsity at eighth grade? Can you move him up? I mean, and then
you move him up to high school?
And you don't want him hurt? Sure.
Somebody asked, what's the kid's name? I missed that part of the segment.
J-A-H-E-I-M.
Jaheim or Jaheim?
Jaheim or Jaheim.
Okay.
Otis. O-A-T-I-S.
Okay. Somebody did ask about Kylie Wong. They're like, does he speak to kids? I'm looking for someone to speak to my football team and give them encouragement. I have no idea.
We'll relay. I mean, yeah, we can just relay that to AMAC.
I would suggest go
message us or
go to the what was it? Theathleticroom.com. Uh-huh. There's contact information there. Just hit them up there. Just say, hey, I heard Kylie Wong on ESPN on The Usual Suspects. I'd like for him to come talk to.
And I'm sure
my
you
team.
Can call the Athletic Room or stop in because it sounds like he's not just invested in the project, that he's actually there.
Yep. Somebody
seems
said,
like a very approachable dude.
He does. Sure. Yeah. Very much so. When I had asked him if what's Watson's ceiling, someone texted in a great point that Watson's ceiling is the roof.
Thanks, Michael.
Yes. That was a valid point.
The guy who is more like Gran Torino than anyone else and wants you to get off his lawn, John Granato, texted in and said, ask Kylie how he'll feel when Rice beats Stanford's ass this year, as only Granato would want us to do. And thankfully, I didn't get that text till after Kylie left.
Yeah. OU Mike said, my first time in stand-up, everyone laughed. My pants fell down, and I didn't have on underwear, but I think it was the jokes.
And you read that on the air.
Well, I wanted to prove a point.
Please.
When you think you're funny, and you do stand-up, most of the time you're not. That's why you do open mics. So, see how OU Mike, see the irony of him texting in a joke about doing stand-up and everyone laughing, but no one laughing at the joke about him doing stand-up and getting laughs. It's the perfect summary of how starting stand-up works. It's the perfect summary.
Yeah. If it was an open mic for OU Mike, it should be a closed mic from this point on. Just stick with your day job and just move on, because no matter what the age, it's passed you by.
64280, this is a text. 64280, he barely hit puberty. Isn't he going to grow more? And won't that cause problems for his flexibility and joint health once he gets to college? I think maybe. It depends on how well he takes care of his body.
Yeah, maybe he'll go to the athletic room.
Maybe so.
Never
get
know.
Some cryo.
There you go. All right, so two in the books, one to go, an hour left of the big show, and we'll continue to roll on with a whole lot more. So if you want to join us, 713-780-3776, that HR&P listener line. Call, text, or hit us on Twitter, The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.